believe we left off at 16.6. Hey, did Lisa do a nice job or what?
Yeah.
Real
nice.
Just think about it.
Very nice. At that time, Rezin, king of Aram, which once again is Syria, recovered Elath from Aram, for Aram, and cleared the Judeans out of Elath entirely, and the Arameans came to Elath and lived there to this day. So we're picking up where Ahaz is king of Judah, and things aren't going well, because once again, Syria is coming down into Israel. They're taking land all the way down into Judah. They're kicking Judeans out. So Ahaz sent messengers to Tiglath-Pileser, I guess that's how you say it, king of Assyria, saying, I am your servant and your son. Come up and deliver me from the hand of the king of Aram and from the hand of the king of Israel, who are rising up against me. Ahaz took silver and gold that was found in the house of the Lord and the treasuries of the king's house and sent a present to the king of Assyria. So the king of Assyria listened to him, and the king of Assyria went up against Damascus and captured it and carried away the people of it away into exile into Kir and put Rezin to death. So basically, Judah was facing trouble from, if you will remember, from Israel and from Syria. I'm assuming they wanted them to join in to fight the Assyrians. And so what he did is he turned to the Assyrians and said, they're bothering me. I'll give you a lot of money. Come help me. Go take care of them and leave me alone. And this version tells us that he said, okay. And so he went up and he defeated the Syrians and put the king to death. And basically, Assyria is becoming the power. I mean, they are just about there. There isn't really anybody that can stand up to them. And I have a little bitty, this is a different map. This map, pass this around. This is the different empires that are coming and the dates are on it. This and you will see they are almost all the same place. Some expand a little further than others. The Macedonians, of course, are the Greeks. But it goes the Assyrians, the Babylonians, the Persians. These are the three that we will deal with in script, that you'll read about in Scripture, that the prophets will write about. And the Greeks, of course, they can't set up their own little kingdoms and their own little areas that were run by the Ptolemies or something like that. Yeah. The generals that were left after Alexander died, each one got an area that took over an area. So one controlled both the Holy Land, one controlled a hunk of Egypt, until the Romans came along. You would pass that around just see. But you'll see that it's almost the same area, because that's where the food is, which is where the water is. You want to pass that around. By Assyrian records, it was in 733 that Assyria laid siege to Damascus, and it laid siege for 2 years before capturing it. Now King Ahaz went to Damascus to meet Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, and saw the altar which was at Damascus. King Ahaz sent to Urijah, the priest, the pattern of the altar and its mold, according to all its workmanship. So he goes into cahoots with this dude, he takes care of Syria, he goes up to meet him to celebrate the great victory, and he sees an altar there, which of course is a pagan altar, he really likes it. And he makes this copy of it, sends it down to Jerusalem, and says, make me one of these. So Urijah the priest built an altar according to all the king Ahaz from Damascus, sent from Damascus. Thus Urijah the priest made it before the coming of King Ahaz from Damascus. So by the time he gets back, the altar's made. This is sort of a big deal. These things, the things that are in the temple, are put there by God. He said what should be there, where it should be, and how big it should be, and he laid all this stuff out. Because the Assyrian, I guess not only did he like the layout of this thing, but what he's saying is their God defeated the Syrians. So I'm going to worship him, give me an altar to their God, and he sort of makes a huge mistake here. The king from Damascus, the king saw the altar, and the king approached the altar and went up to it, and burned his burnt offering and his meal offerings, poured out his drink offerings, and sprinkled the blood of his peace offerings on the altar. The bronze altar, which was before the Lord, he brought from the front of the house, from between his altar and the house of the Lord, and he put it on the north side of his altar. So he's moving things around inside the temple to put in this pagan altar. The Then King Ahaz commanded Urijah the priest, upon the great altar, burn the morning offering and the evening meal offerings and the king's burnt offering and this meal offering with the burnt offering of all the people of the land and their meal offerings and their drink offerings and sprinkle the blood of the burnt offerings. But the bronze altar shall be for me to inquire by. In other words, it's sort of like a means of divination. And what it's once again, this is sort of like voodoo. Over here, you'll keep doing that stuff. But over here, I'm going to do this stuff. It's like this mix of, yeah, I'm still going to do the stuff that God told me to do, but in the house of God, I have this altar where I'm going to inquire by this Assyrian altar. So Urijah the priest did according to all the king Ahaz commanded. And King Ahaz cut off the borders from the stands and removed the lavers from them. And he took down the sea of bronze oxen, which were under it, and put it on the pavement of stone. The covered way of the Sabbath, which they had built in the house, the outer entry of the king, he removed from the house of the Lord because of the king of Assyria. So what has happened was he made a spiritual change because he paid off the king of Assyria. This is basically, he sees their power. Assyria is just, nobody can stop them. They're not, Egypt's not a threat. There's nobody out there who is a threat to these guys. And he wants in. Now, this is what 2 Chronicles says about this, these events from 28:16-25. At that time, King Ahaz sent to the king of Assyria for help. For again, the Edomites had come and attacked Judah and carried away the captives. The Philistines had also invaded the cities of the lowlands of the Negev and Judah and taken Beth Shemesh, Ajalon, and a whole bunch of other places where they settled. For the Lord humbled Judah because of Ahaz the king, for he had brought about a lack of restraint in Judah and was very unfaithful to the Lord. So Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, came against him and afflicted him instead of strengthening him. This is the guy who he had just went into cahoots with. And what did you think is going to happen? You know, did you really think that a couple ducats was going to take care of this guy? He was going to take Syria anyway, so he just took your money without having to fight and went up and got what he wanted. Although Ahaz took a portion of the house of the Lord. So, and by the way, this makes out that the Edomites who are on the right and the Philistines who are on the left are all giving him problems. So he has them here, them there. Syria and Israel are all coming against him. Ahaz is not doing well. Then the guy that he turned to when he bribed turns on him too. So, yeah, his days are numbered. And he gave to the king of Syria, but it didn't help him. Now, in the time of his distress, this same king Ahaz become yet more unfaithful to the Lord, for he sacrificed to the gods of Damascus, which had defeated him. He said, because the gods of the king of Aram helped them, I will sacrifice to them that they may help me. This is even before he brought the altar of the Assyrians down. This is what he was doing with the Syrians. You know, because they were overwhelming him. It was just what he did. Whoever's winning, he wanted their God. But they became the downfall for him and of all of Israel. Moreover, when Ahaz gathered together the utensils of the house of God, he cut the utensils of the house of God in pieces, and he closed the door of the house of the Lord and made altars for himself in every corner of Jerusalem. Let me understand. He closed the doors of the house of the Lord. The temple was closed. And this will mean something to you when we get to Josiah and Hezekiah. In every city of Judah, he made high places to burn incense to other gods and provoke the Lord, the God of his fathers, to anger. Now, back to 2 Kings, verse 19. Now, the rest of the acts of Ahaz and all he did, are they not written in the book of Chronicles, Kings of Judah? So Ahaz slept with his fathers, and he was buried with his fathers in the city of David, and his son Hezekiah reigned in his place. Things are bad all around. We have spiraled down from the times of Saul, David, and Solomon to the point of just spiritual decay in the north and spiritual decay in the south. The north is as bad as it is in the south, what we just read. The north is in dire straits. Those last words, his son Hezekiah, that's good news because there is a period of revival that is coming. In Judah, there is no revival coming in the north. Chapter 17. In the 12th year of Ahaz, king of Judah, Hoshea, son of Elah, became king over Israel and Samaria, and he reigned 9 years. He did evil in the sight of the Lord, only not as the kings of Israel who were before him. Shalmaneser, the king of Assyria, came up against him, and Hoshea became his servant and paid him tribute. Shalmaneser was the son of Tiglath, and he began the siege of Israel, but died and was succeeded by his son Sargon. In 722, was there from 722 to 705, and he's the guy to finish the job. But the king of Assyria found conspiracy in Hoshea, and he sent messengers to the king of Egypt, and had offered no tribute to the king of Assyria, as he had done year by year. So the king of Assyria shut him up and bound him in prison. So what this is saying is, what he tried to do is he stopped sending money to Assyria, which they never like, and he started talking to the king of Egypt for one reason, that was to come up and let's take care of Assyria, which wasn't going to work. Then the king of Assyria invaded the whole land and went up to Samaria and besieged it 3 years. In the 9th year of Hoshea, king of Assyria captured Samaria and carried Israel away into exile to Assyria. The north is done. It has just ended. He settled them in Hela and Habor on the rivers Gozan in the cities of the Medes. The Assyrian records indicate that 27,290 men were deported as far north as Hela. That's northeast of Nineveh. That's way up there. As were the cities of Medes. They were all up in the north. I mean, he sent them far away. He didn't take them across the border. They never returned. They were carried as far east as Susa and the place where the events, which is the place where Esther happened. When Esther occurs, the book of Esther, this is how Esther got there and all the Jewish people that were there. Now, this came about because the rest of this, by the way, there was like one verse that said, that was it, they're gone. And there was no great to-do. It was just, that's it, they're gone. I had told them time and time again. Now, the rest of this chapter is God explaining why they're gone. Now, this came about because the sons of Israel had sinned against their Lord, who had brought them up from the land of Egypt, from under the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And they also feared other gods. And they walked in the customs of the nations, who the Lord had driven out before the sons of Israel, and the customs of the kings of Israel, which they had introduced. When they, all the way up, and right before they went into the promised land, he said, do not go in there and do the customs of the people who were there. The reason I am giving you the land is not because you are good. I am giving you the land because they are bad. If you go in there and do the things they're doing, I will take it from you. Well, he just said, they did. The sons of Israel did these things secretly, which were not right against the Lord their God. Moreover, they built for themselves high places in all their towns, from the watchtowers to the fortified cities. They set for themselves sacred pillars and asherim on every hill and under every green tree. And there they burned incense in all the high places, and the nations did which the Lord had carried away to exile before them. And they did evil things, provoking the Lord. They served idols, concerning which the Lord said to them, you shall not do these things. Yet the Lord warned Israel and Judah through all his prophets and every seer, saying, turn from your evil ways and keep my commandments, my statutes according to all the law which I commanded your fathers, and which I sent to you through my servants and prophets. So what he's saying is, I warned you continually, I told you continually. There's a little verse, I can't remember where it is, that says that because God's wrath doesn't come instantaneously, we believe it's not coming at all. And God is just making his case. He doesn't have to do this, but he's making a case of why this happened. However, they did not listen, but stiffened their necks like their fathers, who did not believe in the Lord their God. They rejected his statutes and his covenants, which he made with their fathers, and his warnings. So what he's doing, he's going generations back. He's saying it's not just because what this group did, it's all before them. And they followed vanity and became vain, and went after the nations which surrounded them, concerning which the Lord had commanded them not to do like them. They forsook all the commandments of the Lord their God, and made for themselves molten images, even two calves. If you remember the calves, the sins of Jeroboam, and made an Asherah, and worshipped the host of heaven, and served Baal. Then they made their sons and their daughters pass through the fire, and practiced divination and enchantments. When you start getting involved, by the way, in fortune-telling, soothsaying, horoscopes, astrology, you start playing with that stuff, Whether it's working or not, that's not the point. The point is that you're turning and you're trusting in something else other than God. It doesn't matter whether it works. It matters what your intent was. And sold themselves to do evil in the sight of the Lord, provoking him. So the Lord was very angry with Israel and removed them from his sight. None was left except the tribe of Judah. Also, Judah did not keep the commands of the Lord of God, but walked in the customs which Israel had introduced. If you will remember, that happened when? If you go back to Jehoshaphat, when he allowed, who was a godly man, but allowed his family to marry into Ahab's family, and they are still feeling the sting of that. That's what Ahaz was. It was still part of that crap that came down from the north. All for material and political gain. They sacrificed the spiritual, and even they are paying a price. The Lord rejected all the descendants of Israel and afflicted them and gave them in the hands of the plunderers until he cast them out of his sight. And he also torn Israel from the house of David, that they made Jeroboam the son of Nebat king. Then Jeroboam drove Israel away from following the Lord and made them commit a great sin. Jeroboam has a lot of splaining to do. He's getting blamed all the way till the end. The sons of Israel walked in the sins of Jeroboam, which he did, they did not depart from them, until the Lord removed Israel from his sight, as he spoke through all his servants and prophets. So Israel was carried away into exile from their own land to Assyria until this day. Well, until the day this was written. The king of Assyria brought men from Babylon and from Huthah and from Avava, and from Hamath and some other place. Sephar, Vaim, and settled them in the cities of Samaria, the places of the sons of Israel, and they possessed Samaria and lived in these cities. So what they did is they took them out of there, and he picked these other people and sent them in there. And so not only did he remove Israel, he sent his people from these different places, from Babylon and from all these other, which he controlled, and sent them in to take it. I wanted to do some research, and I forgot about if this is where the idea of the Samaritans from that in the New Testament comes from. I need to do a little more research on that. At the beginning of their lives there, they did not fear the Lord. Therefore, the Lord sent lions among them, which killed some of them. So basically what happens is God's still watching the land. These foreigners come in and do what they've always been doing. When they were in Babylon doing what they were doing, they weren't being punished for it. But they came to Israel and did it, and are getting eaten by lions. So they spoke to the king of Assyria, saying, "The nations whom you have carried away into exile in the cities of Samaria do not know the customs of the God of the land. So he sent lions among us, and behold, they killed them because they did not know the customs of the God of the land." So these people are smart enough to go, "Wait a minute, we know where this is coming from." And these people, we don't even know what to do to make this stop, is what they're saying. We know why this is happening. We know who's doing it. We don't know what he wants from us. We don't know what to do. The king of Assyria commanded, saying, "Take there one of the priests whom you carried away in exile and let him go and live there." There aren't many priests up in north, so there can't be that many. And let them teach them the customs of the God of the land. So what he does is he sends back one priest of the Lord to teach these foreigners how not to tick God off so that lions don't come and eat you. And they were very happy for that. And there was much rejoicing in the land. So one of the priests whom they carried away into exile from Samaria came and lived in Bethel, and he taught them how they should fear the Lord. But every nation still made gods of its own and put them in the houses of the high place which the people of Samaria had made, every nation's in their cities which they lived. The men of Babylon made, I guess this is what they made regarding their god, it's Succoth Beneth, and the men of Cuth made something else, and the men of Hamath made Ashima, and it goes on. What they're doing is they're naming exactly what they did. These are all people from the east that were sent in. Each one, they're talking about, I can't even find a real way to put this in today's perspective because we've narrowed it down to what is known as to, you know, a couple great religions. But each one of these had their own little way of their own God, which they worshiped their own way. And what they're saying is they set up shop. If they were from here, this is what they did. If they were from that place and settled in this city, So each one settled, the people from Babylon settled in one city, the people from another place settled in another city, and they brought their religion with them. They also feared the Lord and appointed for among themselves priests of the high places, who acted for them in the house of the high places. They feared the Lord and served their own gods, according to the customs of the nation from among whom they had been carried away into exile. They just basically didn't know what else to do. They didn't want to lose what they had, but they don't want to keep getting eaten by lions, which is always a detriment. And so it just says it plainly. They feared the Lord and served their own gods, which is exactly what Israel was doing. But Israel was God's chosen people. So there really isn't a whole lot of difference here, other than these people could at least plead ignorance. They don't have the miracles that Israel stood on. They don't have the reasons that Israel had, other than stop the lions from eating us. You know, that was pretty much, that's motivation.
During the time when Israel's getting the miracles and everything, is God kind of like keeping an eye on the whole world, but just doing what he needs to do in this one spot?
Yep.
And ignoring everybody else for now?
Keeping a very watchful eye on them. You will see these people show up that know the Lord that are far away. It's very interesting to read about Nebuchadnezzar. Read about him and his pride going up and down, and his understanding of the Lord and who God is. And he's definitely not from Israel. These all descended from Adam. They all came from the flood, from Noah on. But when God said to Abraham, "You are going to be my nation. I am going to use you and your descendants to talk to the world." Well, here we are, thousands of years later, reading about it. Why? Because God used them to talk to the world. The lessons that keep repeating every generation. That we have to, every generation has to learn them, go through them, fail, find find their peace with the Lord, repent, and get ready for eternity. The next generation comes along, and God used, just picked Abraham and said, "This is how I'm going to do it." And to bring the law, which brings grace, I picked you. And you're going to be there, and that's where it's going to happen. He never forgot the rest of the world. The things that were going on, they're all important. They all matter. And that's what it says. God so loved the world in John. It doesn't say that God loved Israel.
But
my eye is on all of it. And I just used Israel to express myself to the world. It's not just for them. It's for everybody. And the book of Hebrews, it explains that straight through. To this day, they do according to their earlier customs. They do not fear the Lord, nor do they follow their statutes or their ordinances of the law, nor the commandments which the Lord commanded the sons of Jacob, whom he made of Israel, with whom the Lord made a covenant and commanded them, saying, "You shall not fear other gods, nor bow down to yourselves, or do them, and serve them, and nor sacrifice them." Okay, but they really don't know the commandment of Jacob. They're not from there. "But the Lord who brought you up from the land of Egypt with great power." See, he keeps bringing that up. And there's a reason. Because that's why all these things I've done are the reason you should... I've been talking about this. This is the basis of your faith. It's reasonable to have faith in me because of what you've seen me do. If I would have not done these things, then okay. But I've proven myself to you time and time again. "With great power and outstretched arms, him you shall fear, and to him you shall bow yourself down, and to him you shall sacrifice. The statutes and the ordinances and the laws and the commandments which he wrote for you, you shall observe and do forever, and you shall not fear other gods. The covenant that I have made with you, you shall not forget, nor shall you fear other gods. But the Lord your God you shall fear, and he will deliver you from the hand of your enemies." However, they did not listen, but they did according to their earlier customs. So while these nations feared the Lord, they also served their idols, their children likewise, and their grandchildren, as their fathers did, so they do to this day. What year did Israel become a nation? 48?
Yes.
From this date.
The anniversary of it was today, I believe, or yesterday.
From this day, when they're taken away, to 1948, as far as political power. I mean, they get sent back from exile, but they are always under somebody else's thumb. As far as being their Israel being its own nation, it ain't until 1948 that it happens, that they become a nation again. That's why a lot of people thought, a lot of people took that Israel becoming a nation thing and went to the Book of Revelations and started selling off their belongings and stood out in the lawn with a lawn chair looking to the sky. And, nowhere in Scripture does it tell you to do that. I know what that means, you know. Pull the kids out of school, honey, you know. They saw that as the big thing that was going to, that's the sign of the Lord coming back. And, and yet Jesus said so plainly, if anyone tells you that they know when it is, they're lying. No one knows but the Father. You know, I don't know how people can do that when Jesus said, you're not going to know, and then they stand up and say, I know. Well, did he just say, no one really is going to know, and then they stand up and say, I know, something's up. Okay.
He said a lot of things.
Yeah, I said a lot of stuff.
Sounds like a Monty Python skit.
Oh, yeah. I got on Blu-ray now. I was so inspired that I got on Blu-ray. Yeah. Coconuts are migratory? Yeah. Anyway. Chapter 18.
Disregard that for all those listening.
For all you out there in TV land. Yeah. Chapter 18. The rest of the book is about Judah. It goes from the year 722... until the year 586, when Judah is carted away. Math-wise, what's that, 130-some years? Or something like that. Or more.
Wait, decipher. 136.
Yeah, okay, 136 years. So they last a century and a third longer than their northern brother. Now it came about in the third year of Hoshea, son of Eli, king of Israel, that Hezekiah, the son of Ahaz, king of Judah, became king. He was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned 29 years in Jerusalem, from 715 to 686. And his mother's name was Abi. She's called both, but this one, she gets both names, but this one, they stick it with Abi, the daughter of Zechariah. Once again, Isaiah and Micah are the prophets. He did right in the sight of the Lord, according to all that his father David had done. If you check in 2 Chronicles 29, 30, and 31, those chapters, it tells you what those right things were. He just went and, remember the last guy closed up the temple? His dad. Well, he took care of that business. He went through and he just put everything back. He did away with everything that was wrong, and he put back everything that was right. Hezekiah was a turning point, which is one of the reasons why they lasted 130-some years longer. He restored the temple, reinstituted the Passover, reestablished the priesthood. Verse 4, he removed the high places. Boy, that should be, a bell should go off. Yeah, how long did it take? Who put the high places up? Anybody remember? Solomon. From Solomon to this dude, nobody took them down. And he said, enough of that. There was a couple who said, you shouldn't do that, you shouldn't go up there, but he tore them down. And broke down the sacred pillars and cut down the Asherah. He broke into pieces the bronze serpent that Moses had made. This is fascinating. This just comes up out of nowhere. There isn't a lot of reference to this again. There was the reference, and I'm going to read it, from Numbers, where it happened. Then you don't hear nothing about it until right here. This is us. If you remember, I'll read the rest of it and I'll tell you about it. That Moses had made, for until those days, the sons of Israel burned incense to it and called it Nahashtan. When the people were being the people, and they were their usual complaining, whining selves, the Lord sent these fiery serpents, snakes, poisonous snakes, who showed up and started biting people for their whining, complaining, and rebellious spirit. Could have been lions, you know? And so they run to Moses, who they were rebelling from, and say, Moses, save us. And Moses, with that heart of Moses, sure. And he fashions this bronze serpent and puts it up into a, not as an idol, but just to, this is what God is saving you from. It's just the people hung on to that thing. from Moses till now, and they burned incense to it. The entire time, through David's time, through Solomon's time, through Saul, through Samuel, they hung on to this stupid thing. And it's us. You know, this is why God doesn't give us stuff like that, because we will do spiritual nincompoopery with it. It's guaranteed.
Technical term?
Oh, absolutely. It's theological. I'm sorry, I'll try to. But we will, because we see it in all the things that God tells us. God blessed somebody with something, and we went and took that blessing and destroyed it and turned it into something. I'm not going to cast disparities against other places, but this is why he says don't make any images, because you'll do stupid stuff with it. You really will. You'll start praying to them, relics, shrines. You know, just I saw Jesus in my grilled cheese. Yeah, so we'll pray to the grilled cheese sandwich. You know, and this is what they're doing, and this isn't God at all. But this guy, it says, oh, this is a, that's a bad idea. We should stop doing that. And he breaks it up. This comes from Numbers 21, 6 through 9. The Lord sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people. No sense sending them if they're not going to bite you. So that the many people of Israel died. So the people came to Moses and said, we have sinned. Man, it's us. It's me. It's easy to say this is them, but it's me. You know, it's when things get hard and tough to you, I'm sorry, you know, and when it doesn't have to be that way, it really doesn't. Because we have spoken against the Lord and you, intercede with the Lord that he may remove the serpents from among us. And the Lord and Moses interceded for the people. It's amazing how your ability to help someone can change how you look to them. Because these people wanted to kill Moses. You know what I mean? Why did you bring us up here just to die? We were better off in Egypt. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And God had just done miracle after miracle. What was wrong? They didn't have any faith. And so they were rebelling against Moses, and he was the worst possible human being on the planet. It's all his fault. We should kill him. And as soon as the snakes come, Moses, could you help us? All of a sudden, God didn't have to do any explaining. Like, I really like Moses. You should treat him better. He didn't have to do any of that. He just sent some snakes. And all of a sudden, Moses' stock rose incredibly. And so at least they're smart enough to go to Moses. And Moses, being Moses, intercedes for them. And man, is there a lesson there. As poorly as he was treated, you know, having done nothing but give up his life for these people, and you know, he was living in the court of Pharaoh. Life was good. You know what I mean? He would have lived out his days in luxury, not sitting in the desert, having people whining continually. And he accepted this. And he did it because he cared. And they just stabbed him in the back continually. And every time they did, he interceded for them. This is why God chose Moses. It really is. To have a heart like that is to have the heart of God. And I don't know if he just gives it to you or if you learn it. I think it's both. Then the Lord said to Moses, make a fiery serpent and set it on a standard, and it shall come about that everyone who is bitten, when he looks at it, he will live. Give them a symbol to see, also a reminder of why these things happened. And Moses made a bronze serpent and set it on a standard. It came about that if a serpent bit a man, when he looked at the bronze serpent, he lived. They had worshipped this thing that time all the way up till now. Actually, there is another reference. It's from John 3:14, and we all know what John's about. As Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so the Son of Man had been lifted up. So if you're wondering why God would say, Moses, make a serpent of bronze and put it up there, when God would surely know that the people are spiritual nincompoops and start worshipping this thing, it's so that this could be said in John 3:14, where it says, it's symbolic of who? Jesus Christ. Look to him who is lifted up, and you will be saved. It goes all at God. God is thinking thousands of years in advance, you know, and he just knows what he's doing. And all these, the things even that happen in your life and you just sometimes dismiss them as incidental. And then a few years later you see where somebody comes up and says to you, you know, I remember when that happened and that really helped me, or that really messed up. You're like, I don't even know what you're talking about. You know, but cool. Because God is doing what God is doing. He trusted in the Lord Hezekiah, the God of Israel, so that after him there was none like him or among all the kings of Judah, nor among all those who were before him. Now, we're going to read about Josiah, who says the same thing, that there was none before him, nor none after him, but this says that there was none after him that were better than him. So I'll leave that conundrum up to you. This was the greatest quality, was his faith. He trusted God, and he believed God. For he clung to the Lord. He did not depart from following him, but he kept his commandments, which the Lord had commanded Moses. The Lord was with him. Wherever he went, he prospered. And he rebelled against the king of Assyria and did not serve him. Whoa. That's like, pretty much like Georgia rebelling from the United States. I mean, you know, go ahead, but it ain't going to work well. Who was it? It was Missouri? Kansas. Kansas just enacted a law that they were talking about enacting a law that if any federal officer comes to arrest someone in Kansas that is doing what Kansas law says you can do with a gun, they will arrest the federal officer. And I went, oh, wow, you guys need to think this over. You know, when the Abrams come rolling down the road, we're going to arrest the ATF agents who come into, and we're going to put them in jail. Oh, don't do that. You know, think that one through. Yeah, but they were debating it in their house. And somebody said, what happens when the army comes? You know, All right. He defeated the Philistines as far as Gaza and its territory, from the watchtower to its fortified city. Now in the fourth year of King Hezekiah, which was the seventh year of Hoshea, king of Israel, Shalmaneser, king of Assyria, came up against Samaria and besieged it. We had just read that. At the end of 3 years, they captured it. The sixth year of Hezekiah, which was the ninth year of Hoshea, king of Israel, Samaria was captured. The king of Assyria carried away Israel into exile to Assyria, and it tells us where they put them. Because they did not obey the voice of the Lord their God, but transgressed his covenant, even though all Moses, the servant of God, had commanded, they would not listen or do. Sort of a final dig in, mentioning it during his, while he's prospering for obeying the Lord, it's sort of like a foil, saying, well, just to let you know that up north they were all taken away because they didn't. Now in the 14th year of King Hezekiah, king of Assyria came up against all the fortified cities of Judah and seized them. Same account, by the way, is found in Isaiah 36, 1 through 39, 8. It's almost word for word. This was most likely because Hezekiah had invaded the Philistines who were under Syrian control. 2 Chronicles 32 also mentions this event. There are three accounts of this event. 2 Chronicles, 2 Kings, and Isaiah, who was the prophet. Then Hezekiah, king of Judah, sent to the king of Assyria at Lachish and saying, I have done wrong. Withdraw from me. Whatever you impose on me, I will bear. So the king of Assyria required Hezekiah, king of Judah, 300 talents of silver and 30 talents of gold, roughly translate to 11 tons of silver and a ton of gold. Hezekiah gave him all the silver which was found in the house of the Lord and the treasuries of the king's house. At that time, Hezekiah cut off the gold from the doors of the temple of the Lord and from the doorpost which Hezekiah, king of Judah, had overlaid, and gave it to the king of Assyria. Then the king of Assyria sent Tartan and Rabsaris and Rabshakeh from Lachish to the king Hezekiah with a large army to Jerusalem. So they went up, came to Jerusalem. When they went up, they came and stood by the conduit of the upper pole, which is on the highway of the Fuller's Field. And they called to the king, Eliakim, son of Hilkiah, who was over the household, and Shebna the scribe, and Jonah the sons of Asher the recorder came on. They called, so the Assyrian army shows up, comes down, and comes up and cuts off the water supply, I think is what they're saying. And they say, hey, send the king out, and the king's three envoys, the top three dudes, secretary of state, and then they come out and talk. Then Rabshakeh said to them, say not Hezekiah, thus says the great king of Assyria, What is this confidence that you have? You say, but they're only empty words. I have counseled and strength for war. Now on whom do you rely that you rebelled against me? Now behold, you rely on the staff of the crushed reed, even on Egypt, on which if a man leans, it will go into the hand and pierce it. So is Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and all who rely on him. But if you say to me, we trust in the Lord your God, is it not he whose high places and whose altars Hezekiah has taken away? This is a testing of the faith. This heathen dude shows up and says, okay, if you're counting on Egypt, it ain't going to happen. They're nobody. If you're counting on God, wasn't it Hezekiah himself who took down the high places, which was the thing that was the rightest thing he did that nobody else would do? This foreign dude saying, this is happening to you because you took down the high places. He did the rightest thing possible, and he's being tested on it. Basically saying, oh man, did I do the right thing? So what he's saying is, God's mad at you because you did this. And has said to Judah and Jerusalem, you shall worship before his altars in Jerusalem. Now, is that not what God had said in the very beginning? You shall worship. Once the temple was built, this is where you shall worship. It's the only place you shall worship. And that's why there shouldn't be high places. That's why there shouldn't have been two places up north where they had the golden calves. He said, this is it. So this foreign dude is teaching Jewish theology backwards to the Jews, saying you're in sin when they clearly were not. In other words, their righteousness is being tested. Now therefore, come, make a bargain with my master, the king of Assyria, and I will give you 2,000 horses if you are able to report to set riders on them. I'll give you, this is a version of saying, I'll give you some tanks. Let's fight. No. If you can get someone to drive them, I'll give you some tanks. How then can you repulse one official of the least of my master's servants and rely on Egypt for chariots or horsemen? Have I come up without the Lord's approval against this place and destroyed it? The Lord said to me, go up against this land and destroy it. Then Elikim, the son of Hilkiah and the other guy, Shebna and Joah said to Rabshakeh, speak now to your servants in Aramaic, for we understand it. And don't understand, do not speak to us in Judean in the hearing of the people on the wall. What he's saying is, we don't want the people to hear what you're saying, because it's bad news. But Rabshakeh said to them, has my master sent me only to your master, and to speak these words, and not to the men who sit on the wall, doomed to eat their own dung and drink their own urine with you? Then Rechabiah stood and cried with a loud voice in Judean, saying, hear the words of the great king of Assyria. Thus says the king, do not let Hezekiah deceive you, for he will not be able to deliver you from my hand. Nor let Hezekiah make your trust of the Lord, saying, the Lord will surely deliver us, and this city will not be given to the hand of the king of Assyria. Do not listen to Hezekiah, for thus says the king of Assyria, make your peace with me and come out to me. And eat each of his vine and each of his fig tree and drink each of his own water of his own cistern until I come and take you away to a land of your own land, like your own land. And what he's saying is, he's bypassing the king. He's making a spiel to the people. And what he's saying is, hey, if you do this, just stay where you are until I come and take you. And I'm going to take you to a place that's just like this. You're really going to like it. It's really nice. And it said, a new grain, a land of bread and vineyards, a land of olives and honey trees, that you may live and not die. But do not listen to Hezekiah when he misleads you, saying, the Lord will deliver us. Has any one of the gods of the nations delivered this land from the king, from the hand of the king of Assyria? Where were the gods of Hamath and Arpad? Where were the gods of another place? These are all places they destroyed. Have they delivered Samaria from my hand? Whom among all the gods of the land have delivered their land from my hand, that the Lord should deliver Jerusalem from my hand? But the people were silent and answered him not a word, for the king's commandment was, do not answer him. So what this is telling us is that Hezekiah still has control. Why does he have control? Because he did all the things he should have done. What has happened is, in Israel, the spiritual cord that ties them together is back. That cord is stronger than no matter what is happening outside of the walls. It is stronger than all of that. Then Elikim, the son of Hilkiah, who was over the household, and the scribe and the son of Eshba, the recorder, came to Hezekiah with their clothes torn and told him the words of Rabshakeh. We will end there, but it gets interesting, and God is not done with Judah. God shows up, and in probably the most dire of circumstances. They have faced problems before. They have faced mighty armies before, but I don't think they have ever faced anything like Assyria. Assyria was just gobbling everything up. The closest you can come was the power of Egypt. And right now, Egypt can't do anything to stop them. That's how big they are. So, let's pray. Lord, we come before you, and we just ask that the lessons of your word find a home in our hearts. And when they do, they change us so that we can actually be some help to this world. In Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.